Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Podcast on RadioMD, iHeart, or PodcastHealth.com. Podcast Health is the best source for health information. I'm your host, Dr. Mike Roizen. This is 1256B. The B's are always guests. And we had a lot of news on the medical side. So make sure you you download the A segment of 1256 as well. Today's guest is Dr. John Dimoff. He's an assistant professor of graduate psychology at Chatham University in Pittsburgh, and an expert on college drinking. I guess I should ask you right away, before I even talk about our sponsors, John, did you drink in college? Why did you get to be an expert?
You know, it's a really interesting question, because I did not drink in college. And I say that not from sort of a moralistic view, but more, my family was experiencing some financial hardship at the time that I was going to college. Yeah. And I knew that, like, I needed scholarships and a certain academic performance. And I just didn't want to introduce that into part of it. And it worked for me. But I also, you know, appreciate that it is a pretty widespread phenomenon, although, as we'll talk about, it's maybe not as widespread now as it was, you know, a generation or two ago.
We'll get into that in a second. I should say that we're sponsored by 4Youngevity.com, the number 4, Youngevity.com, so that you can go there so that you can live younger longer. There's a coaching program as well as a free newsletter for Youngevity.com. And of course, LifeFirstNaturals.com, the makers of TrueBiotics, Bovine Colostrum, and Dye Rescue. The Dye Rescue seems to go well with the GLP-1 drugs. When you change dose, take it 2 days before, the day of, and 2 days after, and 60% report. Not randomized controlled as with the other drugs they sell or sponsor. But the Dye Rescue is shown to decrease in 60% anecdotally the side effects of diarrhea, constipation, nausea, and vomiting. Our guest today is John Dimoff, who, as I said, is an assistant professor of graduate psychology at Chatham University in Pittsburgh. John, before I get into it, where is Chatham? I know it's Pittsburgh, but where in Pittsburgh? And how big? And tell us a little bit about Chatham.
So Chatham is located, we actually have 3 campuses. We have one that's located in the Shadyside neighborhood, one that is located in what we call the East End, which is also, some people may know, is East Liberty. And then we have one that is also a little north of the city, kind of more toward, I'll say, Gibsonia. I think I'm getting the actual city wrong. But we're a relatively small university, but we have undergraduate and graduate programs. We have master's programs, doctoral programs, some areas such as mine, like in graduate psychology, we've got a little bit of everything. So I like to think that we have sort of that small school appeal, but also, you know, we've got some big degrees that we confer as well.
Now, you study substance abuse and alcohol usage in college students. How did that come about? How did you get interested in that area? And is it an area that is increasing, decreasing in prominence? Are more kids using marijuana or cannabis? What's going on in colleges now?
What led me to this area was actually sort of inspired by that first question that you asked me. So as somebody who didn't drink in college, like, it gave me sort of this interesting, almost like spectator quality to it. And it was something that I was just really curious about in terms of, like, okay, so what makes this so central to so many students' experiences? And I was incredibly fortunate that for my first research job out of undergrad, I was able to work with Michael Sayette at the University of Pittsburgh. And Michael has done some fantastic work looking at alcohol intoxication, as well as, like, cigarette cravings and a whole bunch of other things. But we worked together on a study that was looking at the effects of alcohol consumption on we called group formation. So how did the beverage that a group of three unacquainted strangers, like how did that beverage help them to maybe bond a little faster than if they were not drinking something with alcohol in it? That really just sort of inspired this love of research, as well as this consistent interest in alcohol use, particularly within like younger college-age populations, because that study was not explicitly focused on college students, but we did get a lot of like college juniors and seniors who were a part of it.
Well, let's go back before you go on to the second part. It's such an intriguing, you started the question, because one of the things that alcohol does seem to do is to help with socialization. Did you find that in the study?
So we did. We found that groups that were drinking an alcoholic beverage as compared to a placebo and a control beverage, that they shared smiles more. So like there were more instances in which all three members of a group were smiling at the same time. And also they were more likely to take turns when speaking, such that like the first person would speak, then the second, and then the third. And those behavioral indicators of bonding were correlated with kind of like self-reports of bonding. And so we felt like we already had this idea that that's what a good group looks like, and participants experienced it that way as well. We were able to really kind of drill down and get in the moment sort of data that showed how that bonding occurred. Because what was also interesting was it was a 36-minute drinking interaction. And by the end of that, regardless of what participants were drinking, people were pretty well acquainted by the end. But the difference was for the people who were drinking alcohol, they got to that level of like solid acquaintance faster than the people who drank either a placebo or a control beverage.
And now let's go to the second part of our first question, if you will. And that is, what's happening on college campuses now?
Yeah, so it's an interesting time to be an alcohol researcher, because there has been a pretty consistent decline in alcohol use on campus. Although I'll also say that I'll offer the caveat that it really kind of depends on sort of how you look at it, because the decline is real. So like, as an example of this, when it comes to just alcohol use in the past 30 days, like we're at historic low levels among college students. So like right now, it's about 52% of college students are reporting alcohol use in the past 30 days, whereas just a decade ago, it was 61%. And I should mention too that I'm drawing this from the latest Monitoring the Future survey, which is conducted through the University of Michigan and is kind of like the go-to for these sorts of statistics. So there's been a pretty consistent decrease in alcohol use. And similarly, like on other metrics too, like binge drinking is also decreasing. And there's a lot of like speculation about why that is. You mentioned like, is it increased cannabis use? Correlation does not equal causation, but over the past number of years, there has definitely been an increase in cannabis use. I think there are good reasons to wonder if maybe there's been sort of a shift from one substance to another, at least, you know, among some college students. But I suspect that there's multiple factors in addition to that, too.
Is there other drug usage that's penetrating the college campuses? If you say, is there as much socialization with cannabis or more or less?
So that's a really good question. I don't have numbers that would speak to the social component of cannabis use. You know, anecdotally, I could see like examples of both. You know, I think that there are sort of images of people gathering and kind of partaking in cannabis collectively. But at the same time, there are enough parallels with cigarette smoking or e-cigarette use that, you know, would suggest that people could also be using cannabis alone. I would say that I would be surprised if we have not studied that question, but sometimes I am surprised with what questions have not yet been answered. So yeah, I don't know that cannabis is being used for quite the same socialization elements as alcohol has historically been credited with, but that is more of my speculation than something that I can back up with a citation or two.
when someone gets involved with alcohol, meaning what's the percentage that end up with an alcohol use disorder once they start on campus, or is it not determined?
I can't remember estimates off the top of my head, but they're also a little bit dated. So I think it is important to mention that for many students who do experiment with alcohol or even have a bit of a, you know, a more intense experience with alcohol as an undergrad, that many do not go on to develop, I'll say, like on the more severe side of alcohol use disorders, because it's tricky with the DSM-5, which is psychology and psychiatry's diagnostic manual. Whenever there was like some pretty widespread revisions to it that were published in 2013, one of the major revisions for alcohol use disorder was that people only need to endorse like two symptoms now to meet what we consider to be like alcohol use disorder mild. So if somebody says, I spend a lot of time using alcohol and I also drink more than I expect when I do, like those two things alone, even if the person is not experiencing like physical withdrawal symptoms or dependence, they would meet criteria for a mild alcohol use disorder. So I think that that adds some complexity to it, because then you need to sort of wonder like, okay, so to what degree does experimentation lead to a mild or moderate or severe alcohol use disorder? And like some of those estimates are, you know, a little hard to pin down, because there is like a temporal component to it as well, because it's like, you know, is it the development of a disorder within the next 3 months? Is it any time in college? And so I guess just to sort of reiterate the primary point, I would say that the majority of students who experiment do not go on to experience the worst versions or the most severe versions of alcohol use disorders.
Let me switch a little bit on the subject and say, tell us about what your research is now at Chatham University.
Yeah, so I have two studies currently that I worked on with students. So one student, this was her dissertation study, and another, this was like a master's level project. So in the dissertation study with Francesca Folio, we were looking at maybe some of the like hidden ways in which like college drinking may be experienced as pleasant for students. So we were particularly interested in whether this belief that college is a time to experiment with drinking led students to feel like they were more similar to like their perception of the average student at their college. And we were fortunate to find that. I say that just because a lot of work went into developing that hypothesis. What is interesting about that is that there's plenty of other studies that have found that these perceptions of the average college student are not particularly accurate, such that many students overestimate how much other students are drinking. And so that can be risky, because it suggests that, like, if I'm overestimating what the average student does and I'm trying to be like the average student, well, then I'm probably going to overdo it. So that was part of what we found there. The other thing, or the other study, was interested in taking what I would consider, and I think many would consider to be, the leading measure of college alcohol beliefs, which is a measure that is abbreviated to call, like, to be called the CLASS, which stands for the College Life Alcohol Salience Scale. That measure has been used in a lot of previous studies. It was popularized by a researcher named Timothy Osberg at Niagara University. We wanted to see, like, how does that measure hold up when you have kind of a national and incredibly diverse sample of college students? Because a lot of work is usually like, you know, I'm going to recruit from the college that I'm working at. We were fortunate enough to recruit from over 150 like brick and mortar colleges and universities in the US. And we had just like every kind of identity that you can think of represented in our group or in our sample. And we found that in this sample, just like so many others, that scores on the CLASS were predictive of whether students drank, whether they had experienced any consequences because of their drinking. And we also saw, too, that one of the things that kind of predicts college alcohol beliefs was sort of this belief in what we might consider to be more masculine norms. Now, I say that with the idea being that it's not just things like social image, competitiveness, dominance, like that's not just a masculine thing. But we saw that was a predictor of these beliefs, which I'm excited to explore more because I think we focus so much on like, what do these beliefs do? But I'm hoping that this work can maybe lead to more research looking at like, okay, so where do these beliefs come from? Because I feel like the further upstream we get, the more effective prevention efforts could be.
So I want to thank you. We've been talking with John Dimoff of Chatham University in Pittsburgh. I learned they have three divisions and graduate school as well as undergraduate. So John, thank you very much and for teaching a little bit about the decline in alcohol use, the value of socialization from alcohol. The third point I took home is the one that you're currently exploring, that it is masculine traits, whether they're done by male or female, but it seems like masculine traits may condition to alcohol use. So thank you very much. Our sponsors again, foryoungevity.com and lifesfirstnaturals.com. Go to both of their websites, foryoungevity.com, sign up for the free newsletter, information about the coaching program in longevity, and go to lifesfirstnaturals.com to see the randomized double-blind controlled trials on bovine colostrum and specific probiotics called Truebiotics. Thanks again. Especially thank you, our listeners. You're the reason we do this. We'll be back next week with 1257B. This has been 56B. Thanks again for being one of our downloaders.